Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much for what was a very positive and cohesive submission. I think it's fair to say that the way that you made your presentation and involved all of your members in a fairly cohesive and well-organised manner probably reflects the way you operate as a catchment group, so I'd just like to commend you on that. I'll just see if we now have any questions for you in terms of the points you made in your submission. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have two questions. Do you know the water quality tests within the catchment group area as it enters and is discharged to the sea? Or do you have plans to actually do that at some stage?
No, there is a monitoring site at the Thornbury Bridge, and we've had a field day there and had an understanding of that. So that's represented on the Environment Southland State and Trends map. So essentially that is our only measure, and we've had Environment Southland scientists come out, and that question is generally, when you first start up a catchment group, it's the first question that gets asked. Why don't we measure at the top and measure at the bottom? And then we'll see what... Their advice is that that's not required.
So, just take that a bit further, what is their advice to get... Because you've given a really good overview of what you're doing and bringing people together, but at the end of the day, it's the success of that will be measured by proof of trend?
Yeah, correct.
So we've had advice from them that this, we can't really put the monitoring station further down because it's tidal to the Thornbury Bridge. A whole lot of our catchment is actually below that, the water comes in below, and there's no effective way to measure that because it gets salty half the time, like the night. So the washing in and out. Probably one of the biggest issues we feel is the health of the estuary, and again, the water monitoring isn't that good at. Again, it's going to be funny for me to say, but it's not that good an indication of the health of the estuary itself. That's more the layers of the mud underneath and the life in it. We could put or look towards or push for monitoring below a tautau to say at the top, but there is monitoring of the tautau stream, which is further up. I think that's actually on the Porokino side. But we almost have the output one already, well, as far as can be feasible.
I think the clarification is 50% of our land area goes pretty much below the Thornbury monitoring station Lloyd, so you can't get a good indicator of effect of how we're achieving. Unless technology can change, so we can do some more around that.
And the advice from ES is there's only a certain amount of money they can spend on monitoring sites around Southland, and they feel that they've got them placed in the right places at this stage.
Thank you for that. My last question is, you made mention about intensive winter grazing and you didn't like the per hectare limit or per hectare number. And a number of submitters have said to us for us to consider percentage. Do you know what your group's view on if we had a percentage with a cap and if you fell outside of that, you would need a consent? Yep. Does that make more sense within, and if so, what would that percentage be?
We definitely agree with that. We'd still refer back to that we'd rather see that involved in a farm environment plan, and then the good management practices alongside that. We realise that there are farm businesses in Southland set up as grazing units, and they might go over their 50 hectare limit or a 15% limit. Generally for a dairy unit, if I take it, or a traditional sheep breeding unit, it seems to be about 15% of land area would be required for winter grazing.
Up to.
Thank you. No more questions, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, thank you. Two questions. We're obviously with the cutting edge of innovation and good management, so appreciate your submission this morning. The first question is, and you state in the narrative this morning, we believe there is a significant proportion of farmers and land users not following GMPs. This represents the low-hanging fruit required. But you stop short of actually telling us a way that we can guarantee engagement, and this plan is about actually mandating those people to do farm plans his in and various behaviours. So, well, you got any comment about that? We all recognise that's the problem.
I've got a comment.
Right. Yeah, I'll start, I suppose, quickly. I guess it's we talked about intergenerational, and you would probably reason the direct correlation between the generations that will uptake that technology and implement those plans. And also, I guess, when we create, it's a bit of a snowball effect that previous submitters have talked about this morning, it's that internal pressure within the community around actually being part of that end goal. So I think engagement will naturally come through that internal pressure, and some farmers at the end of the day, if their business isn't sustainable, they're going to drop off.
Yeah, can I just pause you there? So are you saying that the plan should delete its mandating process and rely on peer pressure and community?
No, not at all.
Okay. No,
we're just saying there's opportunity already out there of low-hanging fruit that if we can get them improved to here.
So how should the plan reflect that?
That's your answer, John.
my personal opinion is that as good farmers practicing good management practices and trying to represent our industry well for all in New Zealand and the community, is that the people that are falling below the line, wherever that line should be, we should have a fairly big stick for them.
Okay.
I've got no love for them.
Right.
So if they exit the industry.
Okay, so you're not suggesting that we diminish the requirements in the plan. That's good. Thank you for that. My second question, and you talk about technology improvements and applications are going to take us to improvement. Is there anything in the plan which prevents that from happening? Is there anything in the plan that should be written in a way that encourages that activity better? So we're about getting this plan right. So, and as I read that, it sort of infers that there's some impediments in the plan. Now, have I picked that up wrong?
I'll start with that. I'll start with one of the P21 trials, the grazing one. They've shown, overall, the P21, not even the winter grazing one, 22% reduction in nitrate leaching off farms. And especially with the grazing one, even more phosphate sediment reductions. If the hectare limits are aiming to reduce environmental winter impacts, it won't hold it back, but it's already being done if the good management processes are uptaken. And then there were other ones,
I guess one thing I'm concerned about, as a group we're concerned about, Eric, is if we go into this consenting process around the cost of the consent, so suddenly you've got the compliance cost that then gets channeled into an area where it actually could have been invested to create R&D.
So your principal issue is about the cost of doing the plan
that's one of our issues.
Your principal thing.
Okay. Correct.
Okay, that's got my point. Thank you.
Morning. Does dairy winter grazing occur in the lower upper ring?
Oh, yeah, correct.
A lot? Yep.
There's a small amount of support, dairy support units, but a lot of farmers actually do some internalised wintering.
Yeah. So if the intensive winter grazing wall was to be 10%, and with the threshold requiring a resource consent of 150 hectares or 200, would that drive any perverse behaviours?
We were discussing with a contractor last night that believed he had, at least, two nights ago, that had, and that it's a local contractor, that had 8 clients that under the current rules would need a consent just in our catchment. There was 8 of his clients he doesn't represent.
So some of the perverse outcomes might be that people would invest more in a smaller area, so try and grow higher yielding crops, and at that point you're actually just going to concentrate your leaching and environmental impacts, so more soil damage, more mud, and more nitrate going straight down through a smaller area, which is I feel would be worse. I think you'd also encourage people to come up with ways around the rules, so they'd be looking exactly at the definition of winter, intensive winter crop grazing, and getting just around it. Now, I don't know how much you want to comment about it. It might push one or two to barn systems, but that's significant investment. I'll leave it to someone else there.
And I guess that capital investment has got consequences in regards to how that that effluent's dealt with post capture as well. So it's a balancing act, isn't it?
Yeah.
And often in other cases, when people have done that investment, they'll then intensify their whole system to continue their margin. So that's again an unintended consequence. So.
Thank you.
Thank you. So I've got two questions. One for Sue, for Megan. This one for you, Sue, but Megan first. On the third page of your presentation, the second paragraph starting due to economic, ongoing economic growth, you say it's inevitable that there will be ongoing decline of water quality. Can you explain that further?
If things stay the same, so if we continue in the respect that we are now, in terms of trying to extract more, I guess, money from our businesses with the as low a cost as we can.
So in the next sentence you say catchment groups can slow down or reverse that. So are you are really saying that we should, when I read that on the words, it says, well, we continue to grow, we're going to have poorer water quality. You're not saying that, are you?
No.
If we have these catchment groups working properly and people working together, then we can have economic growth and better water quality. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that's correct.
Good, we'll leave it at that. Sue, just referring to Rule 38, where the Section 42A report has recommended changes to that rule, so you can apply it in the winter period now, but you still have to have regard to soil moisture. So I'll ask you and maybe others, how will farmers be able to determine whether or not the soil moisture conditions are satisfactory for applying effluent during that winter period?
I think John might be better
at it. At the moment, our current tools is obviously to refer to the Environment South and website. But again, I believe with the upshot of technology on farm, cheaper technology, because it already exists in terms of soil moisture probes, that could just become mainstream in Southland, very mainstream in Canterbury. And that's quite specific as well. I think that's a really interesting area, because if we go down the path of not enforcing but encouraging barns and structures, then we're going to have this problem becomes more prevalent compared to our current farm systems, where we're not actually creating effluent in a captured area at that time of year, you know. So
the Environment Southland website locations have temperature as a guideline as well. Is that important to consider that as well as soil moisture?
Temperature is definitely important. It's something that we're monitoring now as farmers applying nitrogen, yeah. Looking for growth and looking at future growth. Yeah.
I think, Morris, we did have that in the submission that we recommended that soil temperatures be part of that as well.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Thanks very much, that's all. Thank you.
No further questions from me, but just one thing for the officers in reply. And it's not directly related to this submission, but this submission comes to my memory. Rule 23B, Romans 8, the 100 metre exclusion distance. I think I inquired about that earlier on in the hearing. I can't find a justification for it either in the Section 32 report, the Section 42A report, or any answers to our questions today. So, in reply, can you please provide the rationale for that 100 metre distance, which is significantly larger than all of the other distances referred to in the rule? And to the submitters, thank you again very much for coming in. I reiterate the positive nature and the helpful nature of your submission. We do appreciate that. And on behalf of the panel, we wish you all the best for your catchment group going forward. Carry on with the good work. Good on you.
Thank you.
Thank you.